Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. On this 17th day of March 2017 in Los Angeles, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Candle 10, Chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, and we're studying text number 6 today. Ulukalam Bakashantam Damna Badhang Samatmajam Velokyananda Prahasad Vadano Vimamochaha Ulukalam Vikarshantam Damna Badhang Samatmajam Velokyananda Prahasad Vadano Vimamochaha Ulukalam Vikarshantam Dana Badhang Somatmajam Vilokyananda Prahasad Vadano Vimamochaha. Ulukalam Vikarshantam Dāvnā buddham sumātmajam Ilokyananda prahasad Vadano vimamochaha Urukalam vikarshantam Dāvnā buddham sumātmajam Ilokyananda prahasad Ulukalam vikarshantam Dana badham sumatmajam Vilokyananda prahasad Vadano vimamochaha. Ladies? Whatever. Ulukalam vikarshantam Dāmnā buddham sumātmajam Vilokyananda prahasad Vadano vimamochaha. Ladies? Ulukalam vikarshantam Dāmnā buddham sumātmajam Vilokyananda prahasad Vadano vimamochaha Ulukalam vikarshantam Dāmnā buddham swamātmajam Vilokyananda prahasad Vadano vimamochaha Ulukalam vikarshantam Dāmnā buddham sumātmajam Vilokyananda prahasad Vadano vimamochaha Ulukalam. The wooden mortar. Vikarshantam. Dragging. Dāmnā. By the rope. Buddham. Bound. Sumātmajam. His own son, Krishna. Vilokya. By seeing. Nandaha. Maharaj Nanda. Prahasat Vadanaha. Whose face began to smile when he saw the wonderful child. Vimamochaha. Released him from the bonds. Translation. When Nanda Maharaj saw his own son bound with ropes to the wooden mortar and dragging it, he smiled and released Krishna from his bonds. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Nanda Maharaj was surprised that Yashoda, Krishna's mother, could have bound her beloved child in such a way. Krishna was exchanging love with her. How then could she have been so cruel as to bind him to the wooden mortar? Nanda Maharaj understood this exchange of love, and therefore he smiled and released Krishna. In other words, as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, binds a living entity in fruitive activities, he binds Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj in parental affection. This is his pastime. Om Jnana Tivarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is the last verse really describing the pastime of Damodar, binding Krishna, and him pulling down those Yamalarjun trees. The next verse describes some wonderful interactions little Krishna has with the elder gopis, other than Mother Yashoda at first here. But I wanted to explore this pastime a little more, this phenomenon that we've just heard about, of Krishna having been bound to the mortar and then dragging that mortar between these two Yamalarjun trees and pulling it down. Now, you remember it describes this huge sound, cracking like thunder, which frightened the residents of Vrindavan at first, and then they came running to the site and they see little Krishna there amongst these two massive trees that have just fallen over, and he's bound to this wooden mortar. He's not dragging it anymore. He's just bound there. No one can figure out how it happened. This little child, it couldn't be 3 or 4 years old, and his little playmates are there, and they insisted, yes, he did it. He pulled it between the two. He pulled it between the two trees, and they came crashing down. But most of the men couldn't believe that. This is just childhood talk. Doesn't make any sense. Although some of them doubted that, well, maybe because Garga Muni said that he was going to be like Narayan, like that. So then Prabhupada reveals something in this purport that's not there in the verse. This is from his realization, also from the commentators. And that Nanda Maharaj was very upset, because he says, who could have tied this innocent little child to this mortar? Remember, they didn't see him dragging it right near these trees, and so that there was this great danger, and the trees came down, and just by providence, by the mercy of the Lord, he was saved again. And therefore, Prabhupada says, how could she have been so cruel as to bind him to the wooden grinding mortar? Now, she here is Yashoda. Now in the Gopal Champu, if I could just, because what's happening here, there's a whole bunch of emotions and relationships going on. And it's explored by Jiva Goswami in his Gopal Champu. He expands it, just like it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the pastime that we understand from Lord Chaitanya was expanded by the great acharyas like Vrindavan Das Thakur and Krishna Das Kaviraj, so that we can get an idea of the whole flow of the pastime. So if we just meditate on this for a minute, remembering very carefully that they do not know that Krishna is God. We know. And so for us, it's, oh yeah, we know he's going to survive and everything, you know. But for the residents of Vrindavan, these intimate associates, they don't. Their knowledge of Krishna has been covered by Yogamaya. So they see him as this little child, helpless little child. So naturally, Nanda Maharaj, he was very concerned of who could possibly have done it. Now in the Gopal Champu, it's described he remains very upset and angry, and he asks Krishna, who did this to you? And Krishna whispers in his ear, it was mother. His mother did it. And Nanda Maharaj becomes, you know, there's a welling of emotion. How could she do that? He's like, as Prabhupada said, how could you be so cruel? So meanwhile, back in the town, Mother Yashoda has heard what's happened. course, everyone is aware, and all the brush that they crack down. And she blames herself. She didn't know about the dragging. The dragging was done, you know, to his friends. They saw all that. So she just blames herself for tying him up and putting him in danger. So she goes into seclusion. She's now in the house. She's not talking to anybody. She's not eating for 3 days. You know. Meanwhile, Krishna sees this relation now between Nanda and Yashoda, that Nanda is angry with Yashoda. So he's got a plan how he can reconcile that. And here's what happens, according to Jiva Goswami, Gopal Champu. So, first thing that happens is Krishna picks up on this mood that Nanda is throwing toward Yashoda. And so he also, when he goes back, and apparently Yashoda would teach Krishna some things. So Nanda Maharaj gives him his little lessons, writing on some bark. And Krishna refuses to see Yashoda. He won't go to see her. He's taking shelter of Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj, he says, okay, you're not going to go and suck your mother's breast. You'll have cow milk now. We'll heat the cow milk and you'll eat that, you know, drink that sweetened cow milk. So he has that. And then, maybe days go by, because it describes that she was in seclusion for 3 days. And Nanda Maharaj gets concerned that Krishna is now estranged from Yashoda. So he encourages him to go back, you know, and see your mother. But Krishna refuses. He said, well, what milk will you drink? He said, I'm going to drink just the cow's milk. Now, who will you play with? I'm just going to play with you, Father. So then Nanda Maharaj encourages Krishna to go, at least go to Rohini, you know, and see your brother's mother, because it's... And so Balaram starts taking him to Rohini, and he pulls his hand from Balaram and runs to his father and gets on his lap and puts his arms around his neck. You see? So now Nanda Maharaj thinks, oh, this is a problem. So Nanda Maharaj then, he says, well, maybe I should go and beat your mother. And he raises his hand like this. And Krishna suddenly gets afraid that he's really going to do it. So he grabs his hand, you see. And what would happen if something... How would you feel if something happened to Mother Yashoda? Implying that, you know, some disaster may happen. And so Krishna is afraid now. You know, he's waking this. So then he runs to his mother. He runs into his mother. And she's so thankful. She's very... you know, super sorry, as you may say, regretful of what happened. And so he embraces her, he sucks her breast, and things are reconciled between Nanda and it. And this way, this is just one small part of the Gopal Champa. And so, this is what's happening. You read the Nectar of Devotion, and you read the details of the parental rasa, because this is all parental rasa. And the details of how Krishna would constantly evoke these different emotions. This is what the Krishna book is all about. Krishna is engineering this ocean of rasa, right? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And evoking, just like the Kaliya pastime, right? He challenges this Kaliya, this horrific snake that's poisoned all the waters of the Yamuna. And as he often does, he doesn't show his power right away. He gets captured, entrapped by one of the coils in this snake with 100 coils. Super frightening. If we would see that, all of us would, you know, scream in fear. So then, if you remember, you know, all of the residents are, where is Krishna? The bad omens start coming, right? And so they follow Krishna's footprints out into the forest, and they go, and now they're on the bank of the Yamuna. And they see Krishna enwrapped in these coils, and he looks like surely like a goner. You know, they say, well, he's doomed. And everyone's lamenting, not just, you know, all the living entities, the cows, the birds, everyone. His mother and father want to go into the stream, and Balaram is holding everyone back. And it goes on for hours like that, until they're at the point of dying. He sees that. And then he breaks out, right? So he's churned up this emotion. Just imagine it. And then the life of your life, you know, your most beloved, he breaks out and he starts dancing on those hoods. Now you can imagine the jubilation that comes. From the depths of despair and lamentation, they come to the heights of ecstasy. This is what, because he's always churning this this ocean of rasa in Vrindavan. So this is what we're privy to by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we're in the 10th canto. And Srila Prabhupada's wonderful comments, this thing about him asking who's so cruel, it's not there in the verse, but he added that in there, you know, and open up this whole thing. So our task, if you will, in our sadhana is to learn to appreciate more and more the gifts that we've been given, the holy name. I was just working on one verse, reviewing it, at the beginning of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And Rupa Goswami has all these beautiful verses, and one of them is about the holy name. Some of you may know this verse. And he says, Jayati Jayati Namananda Rupam Marare Vindamita Nija Dharma Dhyana Pujari Yatnam Katamapi Sakadatam Muktidam Praninam Padamam Amitamekam Jivanam Bhushanam. All glories to the holy name of Krishna, which is the very form of Ananda. The name of Murari, Krishna. And what does it do? It causes one to abandon, he gives a little list there of things, Vidamita Nija Dharma Dhyana Pujariyatam. Your duties, the material duties within Varnashram, material meditation, worshipping of the demigods, all of these things that are common in Vedic culture. Forget it. You're not interested anymore. Right? And even once, his holy name is so merciful, someone chants it somehow or other. Katamati Sakuratam Mukti Dampanyam gives him mukti, liberation. This holy name of Krishna is Padamam Amritam Ekam. It is my soul and supreme nectar, my very life and my only ornament. So much there to contemplate. Now, what can we think or feel as we read that? It says, okay, this is one of our super acharyas experiencing the holy name in this way. But they have made available the means by which we can become purified to also experience it, at least approach that, and feel it, that his holy name. As Prabhupada said, why only 16 rounds? You come to the point of wanting to chant 16,000 rounds. In other words, you never want to stop. It's just the holy name, which is Krishna himself, is a source of the greatest happiness. So why would you stop? If you could go continue eating globjamans constantly, would you ever stop? No, but it becomes less and less pleasurable because it's transcendental as prasadam, but there's a limit to what the body can feel. But there's no limit to what the spirit can experience. That's the whole idea. So we're trying to move off, our contemplation, our remembrance, our efforts to enjoy the senses and the mind, which is the path to bondage and suffering, and cultivate the ability to enjoy, to experience spiritual pleasure in serving Krishna. Beginning with hearing and chanting, these wonderful enchanting pastimes. Prabhupada said the first qualification for going back to Godhead is the and I forget what word he uses, but the ardent desire to hear about Krishna. Isn't it? The ardent desire to hear about Krishna. Well, we have a desire to hear about Krishna, but it's not our all in all, because we're not pure. So we want to hear about other things. We want to forget Krishna. We can actually reenact the fall of the jiva every day. Why don't we just think of Krishna and stop thinking of everything else? Because we still have these latent desires to forget Krishna, so we can try to enjoy. So the process of bhakti, founded on hearing and chanting, especially Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name, is to diminish the desire to hear and chant or to hear or think about anything else beside Krishna. And to increase the desire to hear about Krishna, serve Krishna, remember Krishna, and be able to relish these in such a way that we don't want anything else. So I'd like to share, I was reviewing that chapter on the in parental ras in the nectar of devotion. And I came upon a translation of a verse that just struck me when I first read it in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, translated by Bhanu Maharaj. Such a sweet verse. And this is another thing I'd like to just mention, because I'm only here one day today. And that is, it's worth cultivating. Last night I gave a little talk on the morning program and pronouncing and understanding the meaning as we sing it. You know, that's such an important thing. Because it's in a foreign language, because it's, you know, we've heard it 100 times before, we tend to, materially, if we get conditioned, to space out a little bit. For instance, the first words of Mangala Arati, many of you were there, maybe most, Samsara Dava Nalalidha Loka Tranaya. That's the first word. There's a compound word. It's important to understand how Sanskrit put these compounds together, and it's very, very succinct. So, what does that say? You know, we're there glorifying the spiritual master before the deities. You know, and what the experience is multiform, but the very first experience, the thought, the feeling we should have is great gratitude. We have been burning in this forest fire of material life. Sangsara dhava nalalidha means suffering. We're part of the whole, you know, everybody else, the vast mass of living entities, human beings, who have no inkling. I certainly was, had no inkling of this science, that there even was such a problem. You know, but by contact with Srila Prabhupada, through his devotees, his movement, his books, we understand the reality. So now we've been given this holy name and the means to get out of this forest fire. Now, if you're literally in a forest fire and you're on the point of burning up, and some helicopter comes, you know, dun, 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 and might put something down and pulls you out, aren't you going to say thanks to the helicopter drivers and all the people who arranged for you to do that? It's like, you know, this is exactly how we should feel. That the spiritual master is like this cloud of mercy raining down all these gifts, the holy name, the books, the movement, the association, the prasadam, everything that gives us a connection to Krishna and his devotees, and all of this, all of the previous acharyas, everything that's present here, you know, that we've been given. That's the gift. You know, it's an invaluable gift. There can't be anything more valuable than that. So, to go on, you know, and he has the quality of he's attained like an ocean of auspicious qualities. How is he doing it? Mahaprabhu, Kirtananritya Geet. He's giving the Sankirtan process. He himself is relishing and causing us to relish. This is how we get interested in anything, is that we meet someone who's into it, right? And who's describing it and going to give it to us. Now, if it's some material thing, that just is another way of getting more and more entangled. Here, Prabhu, try this. I mean, how many times, you know, back in the 60s, I go way back. Try this hash. You know, this is really a good one. I tried it myself. Okay. You know, a million times. What is all this advertisement? To try to implant some material desire in you so that next time you want, you know, a car, you'll buy their car. Right? Somehow or other to inject your heart. So, by great fortune, we've met Srila Prabhupada, a few of us directly, and most of us through his media of the books of his devotees, of the movement, of everything that he's created, the temples, the deities, and drawing us our way. Say, here, try this. Try this mantra. You know? And if the person saying that is full of bliss and interest and has something, you know, something, then we go, okay, I'll try it. And as soon as you try it, Krishna from within the heart, he's working on you and he's drawing you away from matter towards spirit. So we have an ocean of shlokas. I remember when I was working here, Omkar, you were here. Judah Karma, I think you were here. No, you weren't here. At 75. Remember for the marathon? Remember? You were here. And Balai, is Balai here? So the greeting. So it was like this whole revelation. The CC was coming out. You know, I'm 2 years in the movement. You know, Jain Hare Krishna doing the thing. And suddenly, here, Prabhu, you edit these chapters in the Anchalila. So now for all day, I'm sitting over there, right in one of those rooms there. Let's see, where was I? I was in your office, Suvas. I think that was my office. One of the rooms that they broke up to. And sitting there working on chapter 13, 14, and 15, Lord Chaitanya's manifestations of ecstasy, you know. And I was saying, wow, you know, I mean, am I really worthy of doing this? But it was my duty, so I was absorbed. And I remember walking in, Santosh was in the office there on Ancha 1, and he was showing me all these verses quoted from the Vidagna Madhava, Lalita Madhava, the writings of Rupa Goswami. Tunde tanda vani ratin vatanute dundavali labdeye karna krodha katam vani gatayate karna bhute vyakspiham chetak prangana sangini vichayate sarvendriyanam kritim no jane janitake yadvidamitai krishne divarnam vahi. Some of you know this verse, right? At least you know of it. So this is when Lord Chaitanya heard this verse about the holy name, he started dancing and chanting in ecstasy, you know. And Haridas Thakur was there too. He heard the same thing. I've never heard such descriptions of them. When I chant, this is Rupa Goswami, you know, chanting about his own experience, giving us insight. When I chant these, I said, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables, Krishna, have produced. When I chant them, they seem to dance within my mouth. I want to have millions of mouths, millions of tongues. When they enter the ears, my ears, I want to have millions of ears. Why just two? And when they enter the courtyard of the heart, all the senses become inert, the mind becomes completely fixed on Krishna. Such a wonderful description. And the Sanskrit, if you can do it, Prabhupada gave us such an effort. These books, you know, there's 18 volumes. When I was working on Bhagavatam in Miami, we had Prabhupada's 30 volumes, and then we were going to follow the program of 400 pages or so per volume. That was, you know, standard. And it started to expand. They'd already done the 11th and 12th canto. That was 7 volumes. And now we started going with the 10th canto. And then, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And we said, oh, this is good. So many volumes, you know. So to make it more economical to buy. And Prabhupada actually said in a letter that you can put one canto per volume. So it wasn't. So anyway, it's condensed. But still 18 big volumes. But how did it get so big? Because Prabhupada wanted us to be able to chant, of course, the purports, you know, to understand, but also he gave the transliteration and the word-by-word meanings so that we would learn these verses, some of them, at least, famous one, like Queen Kunti's prayers. And there's a lecture where Prabhupada says, you should try to get these verses by heart. You know? Because there's a certain power in the Sanskrit, the poetry is beautiful, it enhances, just like a nice kirtan. If someone really knows how to sing well, and everyone, you know, and there's some instruments, the drummers are all skilled, playing perfect time, you know, it enhances your attraction. The holy name itself, just on its own, will take us back to Godhead. But when you have like the deities, they're beautiful anyway. But when you have the love of the pujaris with their skill dressing, it becomes that much more enchanting. So the same thing with these descriptions. Now I'll give you one. That verse that I was talking about, because it's in the same mood of the Mother Yashoda's response to Krishna. The classic pose, right? Aren't there like 100 million little deities of Bal Gopal in India on the altars or dressers or somewhere of him crawling with his hand like this, holding a little butterball is what he's doing. So this is exactly the description Rupa Goswami gives. Kvanata kanaka kinka nika lapam smitamukamudjuna nasika gramuktam kadadita navanita pinnamagre tanayama veksha nanandapatni. Nanandapatni. So Nandapatni is the wife of Nanda, right? And Nananda means delighted. So Nandapatni becomes delighted by this vision of her little son crawling before her. And so you get Nanandapatni. So Kranata Kanaka Kinkanikalapam, his golden waist bells are tinkling very sweetly. Kranita is a word that means sounding, but very sweet, warbling. Kranata Kanaka is golden. Kinkani, those are especially the waist bells. Kinkanikalapam, the strand of them. Kranata Kanaka Kinkanikalapam. Now, who cannot hear the poetic ornaments in there? The same word, or alliteration, the sound. Smita Mukham, beautiful smiling face. He's smiling up at his mother. Ujjvala nasika agramuktam, on his nose is affixed an effulgent pearl. There's a pearl in his nose. Muktam, kadatuta navanita pindam, in his hand, he's holding a little ball of fresh butter. And he's bringing it to his mother and smiling at his mother. Mother Yasoda, seeing her son in this way, she's delighted. The milk is flowing from her breast. That's another one. I'll just give you this other one. This is because this is a conjugal rasa. This is in Vidagdha Madhava. Now, Bhagavad Gita is known, you know, it's a play of Krishna and Radha and the gopis. But there's plenty in there about the other rasas. So this describes Mother Yashoda seeing Krishna. We read it so many times in Krishna book. And so, aha kamala gande ratta sounda hivinde vinihita nayane imachan mukindo mukunda. Kuchikalasha mukabya mambara knopamamba. I'm sorry, I forget the last line. So it says, how wonderful it is. Ahaha, Kamala Gandhir, oh, you who have fragrance just like a lotus. Atva Sounda Yavrinde, you who are the sum total of all beauties. This is little baby Krishna. Sounda Yavrinde, Vinhitanayaneyam. Your mother has seen you. She's placed her vision on you, and she's absorbed and looking at the beautiful face. Nayane yam chan mukindo mukunda. O Mukunda, seeing your beautiful moon-like face, Mukunda. On mukindo mukunda. Kucha kalasa mukhabhyam ambara knopa mamam tava muhanta diharsham varshati shiradam. That's the last one. So she's harsha. She's feeling great jubilation. And from her breasts is flooding this milk that's moistening her whole, or sorry, like that. How wonderful it is. So these verses, these descriptions are meant to be meditated on, absorbed, shared between ourselves. Because the whole idea is to really get absorbed. I'll tell you a story. When I was a kid, I had the best that public education could offer in the 50s and 60s. In Long Island, New York. So when I got to high school, we had to read some Charles Dickens. No, it wasn't high school. It was eighth grade. And we're reading, and we read this book. It's not the most famous. Little Nell. You know, it's this whole story about England and London in the time of the great industry and everything. And this little Nell gets tied up, and you know, she's battered from here and there. And then at the end of the book, this little Nell, she dies, you know. And I remember when reading that, little Nell. She's a little girl. Yeah, Nell. I'm sorry, Nell. That was her name. And so I'm reading this, absorbed, you know, because these great writers, they can really absorb you. And tears have flown from my eyes, right? It's all material. But I was so absorbed in the emotions and the whole thing, and it was skillfully done. Maybe some of you have had that experience before you joined Hare Krishna. But that's how absorbed we're supposed to get in the pastimes of Krishna. That, you know, understanding that this is reality and this is the reflection. If we get absorbed in the reflection, then we miss out on the reality, and we're cheated. We're cheated. Maya is the greatest trickster. You know, we are in a society. You know, the modern society, and it's not just the modern society, where the powers that be, they manipulate the information that comes out. It's become very obvious, this whole thing with fake news and everything. You know, how you can manipulate people's emotion for a certain purpose. To get votes, to get money, to get power, whatever it may be. It's been going on forever, but now it's kind of out in the open. You know, and the internet is a great tool of that. What to speak of the TV and everything else. So, what is that? Those are agents of Maya. Maya Devi. Her thankless task, she's a servant of Krishna after all, is to befool those who want to ignore Krishna into thinking that this is our place, this is who we are, this body, and that our way in which we could be happy and successful is by increasing our bodily and mental pleasures and security in this world. Life after life we do that. Lower species, I mean, you get to human beings and you misuse our intelligence. So Krishna, he's an ocean of compassion. We're all his children, and we're wayward children, exiles. You know, we've left his company. So he always has a plan to try to reclaim those who can be reclaimed, who are willing to be reclaimed, by coming himself and speaking Bhagavad Gita and enacting his pastimes. The same pastimes are going on. He acts, you know, replicas of them here. And leaving the book, sending his representative, somehow or other giving a chance for those who want to, or at least think they might want to, escape from this. If there's another way of to have contact with the genuine article, bhakti, for Krishna, that can draw their mind away from this and give them the understanding. It's important to cultivate the understanding of the tattva, because there's this thinking, feeling, willing. So right now, our thinking, feeling, and willing is all wrapped up in material energy. If we come in contact with the holy name and someone who's sincere, we may actually chant, and then our feeling is going to change a little bit. We'll become a little less, it'll slacken slightly, and we'll become attracted to Krishna. But it's important to undergird that with the thinking, meaning that you cultivate the understanding through the intelligence, through hearing the books, so that when the feeling isn't there, because it's not at the beginning, it's flickering, that the strong intelligence will say, no, this is sadhana bhakti. No, let me go and chant Hare Krishna, go before the deities and pray. Like Kunti prays. O Madhava, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. When you read these prayers, there's so many prayers, Rupa Goswami has so many access. So often, what are they praying for? They're praying for pure love. They're praying that, please, let me increase my taste for the holy name. Namashtaka has two verses where he's praying, let me have more and more taste for the holy name. You can do that, you know. Even as you're chanting Hare Krishna, you can pray to Krishna, please let me, experience more and more taste. Let me have more and more attraction for you and your form of your holy name. Prayer is very important, because it codifies, and we have so many authorized prayers. We can have our own, but Prabhupada says you should repeat the authorized prayers. Identify it. Certainly, I can identify with that prayer of Queen Kunti, right? And so many other prayers. So that's what the Bhagavatam is filled with. It's filled with the pastimes of Krishna, his incarnations, and his devotees, and is filled with the beautiful prayers of these realized souls that we can, latch onto. Like Dhruva Maharaj. I've heard that Lord Chaitanya loved to hear the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. And what is the main lesson for us there? Is that we may start with a material motivation to come to Krishna. And even Krishna says, the pious who want relief from misery, they want some money, they're curious, they want knowledge, they come to me. But the idea is that motivation will change. The desire for Krishna will change. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was fixed on getting a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather's, Lord Brahma. He was very much insulted by his stepmother, Suruchi and Suniti. Did anyone pick up on the significance of the two names? Yeah, but what does Suruchi mean? Suruchi means very beautiful, materially. Suniti means very virtuous. You see? So the virtuous queen wasn't the favorite. The king was attracted to the beautiful queen. But she was, she insulted Dhruva. Later she was sorry. So Dhruva gets insulted. And you know what Dhruva means? Fixed. He's fixed, or determined. So even Narada Muni, he tested him. Said, look, he's too young now. I'll teach you later. He said, no, I'm fixed. Thank you very much, sir. And he started out for the forest. So Narada said, okay. So he taught him the process. And it was, it was appropriate to the age, which is right near the beginning of the universe, that meditation. But along with the meditation, he taught him chanting the holy name, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And also deity worship. He had him, the deity, you can have a deity made of mud if you're out in the forest that you create and you worship, and then at the end of the day, you dissolve, make a new one the next day. That's bona fide. So he was doing that, meditating on Krishna in his heart, in Vishnu form. So he was actually practicing bhakti. So after 6 months, the story. He's breathing. Gradually, he's becoming more and more austere. He's breathing every week or something, one breath. So the universal breathing was becoming choked up. The demigods go to Vishnu, says, "Please do something." He comes down on Garuda and appears before Dhruva. Dhruva's meditation breaks, and he sees his beloved Lord. He goes into ecstasy. He's crying. He's rolling on the ground. It's described that every one of his senses seemed to be consuming the Lord. And then he wants to offer prayers, but he can't because he's only 5 years old. He hasn't studied Sanskrit so well. But he gets the touch of the conch, just like Prahlad got the touch of the hand of Narsingha. And he offers these beautiful prayers. Now, the most famous one isn't in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada would always quote. It's in the Hari Bhakti Siddhartha. It must be from some other Purana. Svaman kratato smivarang nayache. That's the line. He says, Stana vilashi tapasistitoham tvam paptavandeva manindraguham. I wanted a position. Abhilashi, I was longing for a position greater than my father's grandfather, great-grandfather. And therefore I was situated in severe penance. But now I've seen you, Deva Manindragum, who are hidden away even from the Devas. And I understand that what I wanted, and he eventually gets that position in Dhruvaloka, which is not even destroyed at the end of the universe. But now he says, I don't want it. I realize it's no more valuable than broken glass. I've got the divine jewel of your darshan. And therefore, Svaman Kratato Smivana, I don't want anything else besides you. But the prayer that struck me when I read in the Bhagavatam, you know, after all this, what does he pray for? Bhakti mohum bhavahatam tahime basango bhuyadananda mahatam amalashayanam jinanjasobana madhu vasanam bhavabdim. I forget the last line, but he says, Sanskrit. He says, my dear Lord, let me simply have the association of your pure devotees for whom bhakti is flowing like a powerful river. Prabhatam, Tahime, Bhuyadananda Mahatam, whose hearts are completely pure, Amalashayanam. By their association, I will cross over this world of birth and death, which is just full, like an ocean full of blazing fire-like dangers, because I'm becoming mad to drink the nectar of talks about you. And that's where I'll find those talks among your devotees. So this is his ardent prayer. So the association of devotees, Sadhu Sangha, ISKCON Society, you know, Prabhupada worked so hard to create. This is the great treasure. I'm telling you, you know, for those of you who live in New Dwarka, one of the greatest advantages is to have a kirtan, nice kirtan with many voices when you have a house. It's rare to have that. You know, all the people living and go, you know, far from a temple or near a temple, a small temple. San Diego is really like a small temple now. We have our kirtans, enthusiastic kirtans. But only on Sunday or festivals do you really have an upsurge of kirtan where there's a beautiful chorus like that. It was so gratifying, you know, to be here in the morning and hear the Mangal Artik and the other kirtans. It's so beautiful. So we should appreciate these gifts, and they're all meant to draw us, and we have such a wealth of sound vibration that can we can relish, memorize, repeat, share with each other, and churn up our natural attraction for Krishna, which is what it's all about. To come to the point of just being eager to hear and chant and serve and glorify Krishna and go back to Godhead. That is what we're all about here. So I guess I've gone a little overtime. Are there any questions or comments on any of these points? Otherwise, I'm going to throw a few more shlokas with poems attached. Bhakti Mahu? Yes, that's from Bhagavatam, fourth canto. I'll give you the exact reference. Yeah. Go ahead.
I want to thank you very much, Prabhu, for coming up from San Diego, giving us your nice association, speaking about verses. And
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
We'll have to get you to come here more often. Just was wondering, could you please elaborate a little bit on gratitude? You mentioned the word gratitude when we were speaking about the Guru Vastika prayers yesterday.
Yes.
So you mentioned it yesterday, and then today you mentioned the word gratitude twice. So I thought maybe you could elaborate a little bit on the value, the importance of gratitude, and what it actually does for us.
It's a foundational, actually, to our bhakti. There's a Uddhava in the 11th canto. He has a beautiful verse quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he says, Naivopi yanchapatatim kabayastavesha brahmayusha vikutam vindamudaksmaranta yonta abhistanubutam ashubang vidhunvan. These last lines are getting me. Swagatim vyanakti achaya vapashava. Okay, I'll give you the translation. So what he says there is that, my dear Lord, Uddhava is speaking to Krishna. He says, my dear Lord, even the greatest learned devotees, even if they had a lifetime of Brahma, they could not fully express their gratitude to you. because you appear in two forms, externally and internally. Yontar Bahis. Tonabutam Ashabangvadunam. To cleanse away the inauspicious things in the conditioned souls who are bearing a body. How do you appear internally as the super soul and externally as the acharya to show the way back to you? Svagatim vyanakti. So this feeling of gratitude grows, especially when you start to appreciate the treasure of bhakti that we've been given. They go together. And when you think about it, you know, gratitude. I mean, when two people love each other, there's also a lot of gratitude involved. You know, there's gifts being exchanged and you're appreciative. So really being expressing gratitude and feeling gratitude is a natural first step, really, in appreciating. If you're thankful to Krishna for giving you everything that you've been giving, this is a wonderful way of meditating. I mean, so many prayers are glorifying Krishna for all of his wonderful qualities and for his mercy and compassion. This is an expression of gratitude. So what it should do is it should spur us to serve. It should spur us to serve in all kinds of... Naturally, that's what you do. If somebody helps you, suppose you slip and fall, you know, and somebody helps you up, you know. So you feel gratitude and you want to reciprocate. Can I give you something? Can I help you? I have a car. Can I drive you somewhere? It's a natural feeling, isn't it? Even any normal person would do that. So what to speak of the gratitude we should feel to the spiritual master and the whole parampara for making Krishna consciousness available and giving us a chance to break out of the suffering we've been in for millions of births and taste the highest bliss. The gratitude should be like an ocean. We can't really express it, as the Buddha says. So we should think about that. In other words, it should be something we aspire to feel. If we're not feeling gratitude, you say, well, why not? I mean, aren't we feeling the benefits of Krishna consciousness? Otherwise, why are we here? We're experiencing the benefits. So, you know, and it kind of ties in with the idea of being a debtor, right? That devashibhutata vinam vatrinam, that we're not... We come into this world as debtors. We don't recognize it, you know, in this world that we're in, the Western world. But really, we owe the devas. Isn't that part of the lesson of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita? You have to appreciate, you know, the air, the water, you know, the rain makes things grow. We should appreciate it. We're not doing it. It's coming from above. All right, so we make the offering some sacrifice, and in this way, there's a cycle there. You know, if you don't observe that cycle, you're a thief, and you suffer. You know, what to speak of the great gifts of others. So if you surrender to Krishna, you're not a debtor to anyone else. You know, because whatever they are giving you is coming from Krishna. So you consolidated all your debts. Like if you have many credit card debts, you consolidate. So this idea of being a debtor means that, okay, that's an official thing, but we should feel it from the heart that we really cannot repay what has been given by the spiritual master. Didn't Prabhupada say that? But we have to at least try. How? By doing as I do in preaching. That's the only way to begin to repay. We will never really repay. So it's a very important concept, and it can really be felt when we appreciate Krishna consciousness by practicing nicely. And then everything falls into place. So it's important to contemplate that. Yes, Prabhu.
Give me the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Dravida Prabhu, when yesterday you were giving the presentation on Guru Puja and Samsara Dava prayers, as a second generation ISKCON devotee, and obviously we'll be having future generations, when we're doing Guru Puja, obviously Guru Puja is done to Srila Prabhupada. But as second generation devotees, we also have Diksha Gurus. Obviously Prabhupada is the Siksha Guru of all devotees.
Right.
So when we are, because you're speaking on gratitude, you are also giving gratitude to your own spiritual master. I just want to understand the mood as a second generation when we are doing the Guru Puja, when we are doing the Samsara Dava prayers, obviously we are glorifying the spiritual master. Are we allowed in the mood to first glorify our own spiritual master and then it's going to Prabhupada, or is the mood that it is straight to Srila Prabhupada.
The Guru Puja that we do is Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja. And that we should, no matter what generation we're in, that will continue beyond, you know, there's only a few of us left here, of Prabhupada's direct disciples. So that will obviously be come a point where there's none. But the Guru Puja is going to go on because Prabhupada is the ISKCON founder Acharya. And the institution that we're in, all of the things have come from him. So that the Guru Puja is one thing. The Guruvashtaka, the Mangal Arti, is to the spiritual master. Now that includes, and really it's kind of, the spiritual master is there's a place where Prabhupada is one, but he manifests in many forms. That idea. And really it said that, Krishna himself manifests as the spiritual master. You find that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the first chapter. So we for those, verses appropriate, especially, Samsara Dava Nadalila Loka, and giving the holy name, and basically the first four verses, that's going to be there for every spiritual master. Because they're carrying forward Prabhupada's, way in which he set things up. There shouldn't be any spiritual masters who are completely negligent of deity worship and temples and simply do something else. To be a spiritual master in ISKCON means to be carrying forward Prabhupada's means and ways of doing things and his emphasis. So one should, I feel, of course I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, so I'm thinking of Srila Prabhupada. But the other generations, they can think of this, their own spiritual master, and their own spiritual master in relation to Srila Prabhupada in those. Now, when you get to Nikunjiyuno Roti Keli Sidyai, that, you may not be able to think of your spiritual master in that regard. But the whole idea is that it's just a matter of time. You know what I mean? In other words, we're separated by time, but the strength, the force of instruction and mercy, which is coming down from Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the spiritual masters, will eventually act and all of these things will be manifested. So I feel that, for me, I'm thinking of Srila Prabhupada, but other generations, and it's not just one generation, it'll be many generations, will always think of Srila Prabhupada and the relation of their own spiritual master to Srila Prabhupada and how they're moving in that direction. That's the way I would say to do it. There may be some official GBC position, but I haven't read it. So, but certainly, that part I know. The Guru Puja is Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja, and he should be thought of and glorified. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. How long have you been here?